So since that we have a little bit more time, the questions Venerable Jambela came up with, and Christina, you have come up with, these two, just from your side, give me time. And from my side, let me give you time. Because, you know, these questions, although these are questions, but for the responses, for to digest the responses, you should be receptive from many angles. Not just the enthusiasm, but some back, you know, the knowledges, backgrounds you should have. So actually, I'm expected to do something from Trantika School, the topics that, you know, the 6 points which we simply outlined yesterday. Hopefully, when you get some information from these 6 points, then hopefully you become a little bit receptive, you know, in the sense you have at least some basis for to understand the response that I'm going to give. Otherwise, you know, if I simply jump onto the response, then very likely you might not get anything. So therefore, it doesn't really make much sense for us delving into it directly. So since that we have, you know, as for now, since we have a little bit of time, surely, you know, the two questions, which are really very good, and the responses as well, we'll get more time to, you know, imbibe, to digest. Okay, let's go through now. Which page? 97. Sorry? 97. Okay. Okay, 97, yes. Manifest the definition of positive phenomena. So positive and negative phenomena is just the same. We read it all together. We read it, you know, we already read it. The definition of a manifest phenomena is an object. Okay, yeah. This is also quite important. It's actually, you know, the author, Kunjin Jingmei Ongbo, he did a marvelous job. He's able to include all the complex issues, you know, in just three words. Of course, it's quite challenging for us. But also we are getting a lot of share from, you know, the Buddhist philosophy. So there's the manifest phenomena and the hidden phenomena. This is also a very important topic that we need to know. You know, otherwise, not being informed of this topic, then we tend to fall prey to many of, you know, misconceptions that I'll explain to you later. Say again, there are various ways of classifying phenomena or existence, right? One of the ways we did is in terms of the two truths. Anything which exists either should fall in the category of ultimate truth or in the conventional truth, or it can be, you know, classified in the form of permanent and impermanent phenomena. Because you cannot really point to anything which exists not falling to either of these two categories. And also you can classify phenomena, whole phenomena, into specifically characterized phenomena and generally characterized phenomena. Right? Now, the point that we are discussing here is the phenomena divided into, you know, two categories in terms of hidden phenomena and evident, or what, manifest. So I've been always saying evident, manifest. I would say instead of manifest, I would go for evident, the word evident. That is, you know, that I feel is better. Evident phenomena and hidden phenomena. So you may wonder as to, you know, what is the meaning of these two or what it really means. Say, if I ask you to, you know, would you mind giving me a cup of tea or a cup of water then you say, oh, it's right there on the table. You know? And then I look at it, and then I see it. Right? So, a cup of tea or a cup of water is something, when he told me that it's right on the table, you know, I looked at it, and then the understanding that there is a cup of tea on the table is so spontaneous, is so, you know, automatic, which means that I didn't really use any logic or reason to say that, you know, to convince myself that, oh, there's a cup of tea on the table. Which means that as soon as it comes in contact with our direct perception, the object is understood. So those phenomena, the understanding of which doesn't require reasoning. Let me say it again. Those objects or those phenomena whose understanding doesn't require any reasoning is referred to as evident phenomena. Evident meaning so evident that you don't need any reason to inform you or to convince you of the existence of that phenomena or the mode of the existence of that phenomena, right? So simply through one's own direct understanding, immediate understanding, you get the whole information about that object. For example, the cup of tea or the table. What about tree? What is that? Evident or?
Evident.
Are you sure?
Yes.
What about fire?
Evident.
Evident.
Yes.
So you don't need to work out with the help of any reasons?
No.
Are you sure?
Yes.
Oh, I see. There's fire. There must be fire over there because I can see smoke.
Yes.
Sorry?
Yes.
So that is hidden. So it is, you know, so there the fire is not evident. It's hidden, right? The fire over there, is it hidden or evident phenomena?
Hidden.
Are you sure?
Yes.
So what about that person? You know, it is not hidden, it is evident, because it is what is so clearly seen without any reasoning by the one who is lighting the fire over there.
Oh.
So what is that? Is it hidden or?
Evident.
Good. For them, for the person who is close to the fire is evident. Whereas for us, who cannot see the fire directly, who simply understands the existence of the fire there through perceiving or inferring the existence of that fire through the smoke, you know, for these people it is hidden, right? So we see that there is one category of phenomena known as evident phenomena. And yet, there are some other things like emptiness, you know. So today I'm going to distribute each one of you, you know, two emptinesses each. It doesn't make any sense, you know. So then, how can you really get access to emptiness? Is there something that someone gives you? No. So how do you do that?
Through reasoning.
Only through reasoning, right? So therefore, the class of phenomena, whose understanding should necessarily be through reasoning, is hidden phenomena, right? Okay. So we have the evident phenomena and hidden phenomena. Within hidden phenomena, again, we see, say, you know, the impermanence. Is this something that which is so evident to us? The subtle impermanence?
No.
But, you know, by means of one's own reasoning, one's own reflection, you think that you can understand it? Yes, of course, yes. So there's one class of, now we are trying to touch only the hidden phenomena. Within the domain of the hidden phenomena, we see that There is one category which can be understood through pure reasoning, like impermanence and, you know, emptiness and so forth. And whereas, if you ask, you know, if you ask about when is the birthday, Alec, I think your birthday is tomorrow. Day after tomorrow.
Day after tomorrow.
19th. Oh, the 19th. So, are you sure that your birthday is on 19th?
Yes.
Yes, yes, yes. Of course. Don't say no. He's about to say no, you know, with a fear that he, I might put him in trouble. Okay.
Now that infer trouble?
Yeah. Okay. So how do you know that your birthday is the 19th?
Because I was born on the 19th.
How do you know that?
Reliable,
did you see yourself?
Source.
Sorry?
Reliable source told him, because he didn't remember.
No, he wants to really contend with me. I want to contend back. You know? I'm quite tough. So, how do you know that you're born on that day?
This is a very good answer. A reliable source told me nothing.
I see. Your mother is the most reliable person on this earth.
No.
More than Buddha.
No.
So there is some weakness there.
Yes.
Right? So why did you consider that weakness in the case of your mother being a reliable person?
Ask the question again.
Why do you include that weakness? Instead you say that she's so reliable.
She's reliable with respect to my birthday. She was there. She gave birth to me.
I see. So I'm not saying that your mother is insane, but say, there's insane person at the time, you know, insane nurse who's working, you know, helping your mother that day. So is she also reliable?
No,
she's also there.
Okay, that's true. My mother was there.
Okay, look, So. Therefore, there's one class of hidden phenomena, you know, like impermanence, emptiness, and these things, where you can simply get to the understanding through pure reasoning, you know, not necessarily depending on the testimony, on the words of someone else. Meaning, you know, by having to rely on a very reliable person. You can simply work, you know, you simply get the information and then simply try to work that on your own. On your own, and then see, as you know, whether things truly exist, whether things, you know, the functional things, such as the self and others, the objects of attraction, the objects of aversion, they truly undergo momentary change. So, through pure reasoning, without really saying that, without having to say that, oh, you know, the objects of attachment, the objects of aversion, they are disintegrating moment to moment, because the Buddha said so. You know, you don't have to really quote Buddha. You know, so what you do is you borrow the insight and the knowledge and the reasonings from the Buddha, you apply that and test it yourself to see if what the Buddha said is correct by using your own pure reasoning. So those things, those hidden phenomena, which we can understand through using pure reasoning, is the slightly hidden phenomena. Slightly hidden phenomena. So in short, hidden phenomena can be classified into two. Slightly hidden phenomena and completely hidden phenomena, or completely obscured phenomena. Slightly obscured or hidden, and completely obscured or hidden. Right? So whereas your birthday, at least to you, for your mother, it is not absolutely hidden, you know. It is so evident. She just saw it directly, you know. Whereas to you, it is absolutely hidden. Meaning, there is no way by which you can use any kind of pure reasonings to prove that you were born on 19th of, you know, 19 what? September, right? Right? So, the only way by which you understand that you were born on that day is because someone said so. You know? There is no reason, there is no pure reason. It is simply the by the lines on a very authoritative person. Because if you say that it's my mother who told me, and my mother at that time was, has a sound mind, then this quite, we can, quite say that. Right? We can say that we can rely on what she said. Because it's not talking about the emptiness of you. Because whereas if I ask about, the emptiness of your birthday, or it is the emptiness of 19th of September, how do you know this? Or the emptiness of my birthday, on 19th of September, is what I was told by my mother. Even your mother doesn't know that. Emptiness nature of that. But I'm not saying, exactly on my, I don't know how the understanding of your mother's on emptiness. Say if it's not, right? So whereas whereas she is authoritative to tell you about your birthday, but not authoritative to tell you about emptiness of your birthday and these things, right? So whereas the peasant, they have the authority to tell you as to how the plants grow, how the crops grow. And similarly, the shepherds, they know how the cattles, about the cattles so well. And architects, they know so well, they have the authority to instruct you on the architecture and these things. But they don't have the authority to tell you about the cattles. Right? So similarly, with regard to your birthday, your mother has the authority, provided she is sane that time. Right? So this means that we rely on someone else. We rely on someone else rather than, someone else's word, rather than your own using of your own, pure reasoning. So those things whose understanding cannot be done through pure reasoning, instead, has to rely on an authoritative person, is what is known as absolutely hidden phenomena, absolutely obscured phenomena. Completely, yeah. Now this is the broad understanding of, slightly obscured phenomena and completely obscured phenomena, right? So now let's read. The definition of manifest phenomena is an object that is explicitly realized by a direct prime cognition. What does it mean? I see. So there's whole debate here. Okay. So now, without myself defining it in a different way, let us see. But of course, I don't mean to say that what is written here is wrong. Absolutely, the author, in terms of scholarly knowledge, can be, my knowledge multiplied by millions of times would be his knowledge, right? So what I mean to say is that there are different ways of defining it. So because of, depending on how you define, then whole body of that topic or the structure of the topic, you have to reformat it, right? Okay. So, what you are getting so far is according to the definition of the manifest and the hidden phenomena according to the system that we follow in my monastic college. Mm. Right? So, right, now we are going to read this from the system of the other college. Right? Okay. So, let's see. The definition of a manifest, first we need to, according to this, we need to know what direct prime cognition is. So direct prime cognition, last time, all other schools, all Buddhist schools other than Prasangika, their ways of defining first prime cognition and then direct prime cognition. So the prime cognition, the way it is defined, is unanimous. Unanimous in terms of all Buddhist schools other than Prasangika. Prasangika define it slightly differently, the prime cognition. So the rest of the schools, they define in one way. So how do they define it? The prime cognition is the first, the new cognition. The first moment of the cognition, or the new cognition. Which means, this is actually what I have already explained to you earlier, so now it's become clearer. Say the computer, the computer is first created 40 years ago. I don't know when it is created. Say 40 years ago. So the first person, the person who invented the idea of computer, so he has his own knowledge of computer. So now after 40 years, there are several thousands of people who has this knowledge. So if you, so they are both equal in having the knowledge of computer. But of these two, which, who do you think is more intelligent in terms of computer? The person who first invented it, or, all these thousands of people who know about computer nowadays? The first one, right? So what about, in terms of knowledge, it's just the same. Why do you say that the first person, he is more intelligent than all these thousands of people who know about computer nowadays? Because, very simple, it is for a very simple reason, that because all those thousands of people who know about the computer nowadays, their knowledge is simply imitation from him. And whereas his knowledge is something so original. Right? So to get the original knowledge requires tremendous intelligence. But simply imitate is what most of the people can do. Right? Okay. So similarly, in terms of, say you try to reflect on impermanence of the self, which forms a part of the four seals of the Buddha's teaching, right? You reflect on that. So then all of a sudden, you get a very clear inside, moving experience of how you are, you're transitory. You are changing moment by moment. The first moment of your experience of that. And then that will be followed by the second moment, third moment, fourth moment, so forth. So you say you have, that experience lasts for 10 moments. Of these, the first moment, which, of these 10 different moments, which do you think you found it hardest to gain? The experience, the first one, So therefore, just as, all those people who are involved in having the understanding of the computer, how computer works, we say that the first person is the most intelligent one. Similarly, of these 10 moments, the first one gets the credit, of having first found what impermanence means. Right? So therefore, this first moment of the cognition, the understanding is known as the prime cognition. Prime, the most important. So prime, in Sanskrit, it is pra. Pra. And pra can be understood in different ways. It can mean the first. It can mean the most important, or the prime. Right? So, all other schools other than Prasangika, all Buddhist schools other than Prasangika, they interpret this word pra in the form of first. And it is only Prasangika who interpreted it in the form of prime. So unfortunately, translated it as prime cognition. Actually, it should be translated as the original cognition, according to the lower schools. Original, meaning the first cognition, right? So, Then what about the second moment, third moment, fourth moment, and so forth? Their understanding of impermanence is similar to the first moment's understanding of impermanence. So why not the second moment downwards, they are called as the prime cognition or the original cognition. Why? Why not? Because they imitate it from the first moment, right? So then what would you call, what would be the term that you would you use for those the second moment and down?
Subsequent
cognition. Very good. Prime cognition and subsequent cognition. Or actually better would be, in English, for lower schools, would be prime cognition. No. Original cognition and the subsequent cognition. And prime cognition would be better in Prasangika Madhyamika perspective, because they translate it as prime cognition, so where they are not so concerned about whether you cognize it for the first time or you simply imitate. So they are more concerned about whether you really get the main prime object. If you get the prime object correctly, then you are called as the prime cognizer. Right? So the prime or original Prasangika school, they are not concerned about whether you are the first one to do it or second one to do it like that. They are more concerned about the object. So out of different objects, the prime object and secondary object like that, if you get the primary object correctly, then you are called as the prime cognizer from the point of view of Prasangika. So that if you get time to do it, it'll come as we go. Okay. So, but many it's not just this translator. Most of the translators, they translate it as prime cognition. So let us go it this way. But in your mind, you have to interpret it as the original cognition, meaning the first cognition. Right? Okay. So it says, then direct, as we did earlier. So this prime cognition can be of two kinds, Say you reflect on impermanence, then all of a sudden, it clicked. You have the experience of impermanence. Is that something directly experienced or through reasoning? Through reasoning. Which means those understandings that come in you through reasonings are referred to as inferential cognition. Inferential cognition. So within that, the first of that inferential cognition is known as inferential prime cognition. Right? And the second moment down are referred to as inferential subsequent cognition. Right? So whereas, you could look at a flower on the table, so it needs no reasoning to come to this understanding. Right? What is this understanding? Direct perception, right? Direct perception. So the first moment, and this direct perception has many moments. First moment, second moment, and so forth. So the first moment, what do you call it?
Direct
original cognition or prime cognition. Then what about the second moment's downwards?
Direct
subsequent cognitions. Good. So now let's read. The definition of a manifest phenomena is an object that is explicitly realized by direct prime cognition. Right? Explicitly means directly. Directly. Understood by a direct prime cognition. So since that seems like, there are two traditions getting mixed, the tradition from my college and the tradition from the college of the order, they are getting mixed. So it's in your hand, to go either way. So now let me tell you. Can you give me an example of manifest phenomena, manifest or evident phenomena?
The flower on the table.
The flower on the table, is it a manifest phenomena? Yes. Can you give me an instance of, non-manifest phenomena? Something which is not manifest phenomena.
The sun outside that I can't see.
I see. The sun outside that you cannot see. Is that non-manifest?
Yeah.
Are you sure?
Yeah.
I see. Sorry?
Future.
Is it or is it not? So those who said no, let's group together and attack Alec. So how many of you would support me?
The sun outside,
which Alec is not seeing right now.
Is it manifest?
Is it non-manifest?
It's manifest.
Manifest. Okay, so let's all attack him.
Ridiculous.
Okay, so the question would be, so just help me if I'm getting so weak. Say, isn't it a manifest object? No.
Yeah.
Is manifest object because it qualifies the definition of manifest object?
No.
Because it is what? Help me. It is an object that is explicitly realized by direct prime cognition. No. Okay. So that is explicitly what? Realized by direct prime cognition, because that is explicitly realized by direct prime cognition of someone sitting outside. Yes, no?
Yes, it would be.
Okay. So this means that the sun outside that you are not seeing right now, so that is an object that is explicitly realized by direct prime cognition.
No?
That is because that is explicitly realized by a direct prime cognition of someone sitting outside.
Yes.
This means that, you know, when you say it is explicitly directly realized by, you know, direct prime cognition, it should not be your cognition.
Yes, that's correct.
That's correct. Which means that object of discussion, it qualifies the definition of the manifest phenomena. What not?
Because the object that is realized by a direct prime cognition, you posited as being realized by someone outside.
Yeah.
The object that I said was the one that I do not see, and they're different objects.
I see. There's different object.
Yeah, the object that they see and the object that I see, that I don't see.
Yeah.
They're the same.
I see. They are different. Are they different?
Absolutely.
Okay. So, since they are different, you know, that is not seen by them.
Sorry, since it is different, it is not seen by them.
Them, yeah. What they see is not something you are talking about.
No. They don't see the object that I don't see.
Good. They don't see the object that you don't see.
Yes.
So any object that you don't see should necessarily not seen by others.
Not necessarily.
Good. So what is that? The sun outside. That you don't see.
It is an object which is explicitly realized by inferential prime cognition, by the reason that I see the sun rays.
Okay, good. So, but simply by seeing the sun rays, you are not seeing the sun directly.
No.
So you are not seeing you are not realizing the sun explicitly.
No. Well, I am seeing the object explicitly by means of an inferential prime cognition.
I'm not talking about inferential, it is direct. Direct prime cognition.
No, then I'm not seeing it directly.
Good. So what you're not seeing is, you know, is someone else is seeing.
Say that one more time, please.
What you're not seeing.
What I'm not seeing, yes.
The sun is what someone else is seeing.
No.
Are you sure?
Yes.
I see. So there are two suns.
Yes.
Yes, I see. In the solar system, there are 10 suns. Unfortunately, what I've learned is just one sun and 9 planets.
No.
What no?
Because there's only
okay, now to be straightforward, to be direct, my question is, the sun outside which you are not seeing, is it explicitly realized by direct prime cognition or not?
No.
No. It should be, because it is explicitly realized by direct cognition of someone else.
Yeah.
it is explicitly realized by prime cognition of the worker there, the builder. The direct prime cognition, should it necessarily be your direct prime cognition?
No.
No. Someone else, you know, if someone else's direct prime cognition can see that, it fulfills. It suffices a direct prime cognition seeing it. Right? Yes. If that is, then the sun outside that you are not seeing is seen, is explicitly realized by direct prime cognition. In which case, it should be a manifest phenomena.
Right? Okay.
Right?
I should say no.
What? No.
I can't go back.
No. The thing is that, you know, if you say that the piece of word, if you say that you are not a human being, you know, and at the same time you say that any person in this room should necessarily be a human being, then you have to say that, what about you? Are you a person in this room? You say yes. Are you a human being? You say no. You should be, because you are a person in this room, and you accept that any person in this room should necessarily be a human being. So then you relinquish your original standpoint. So I give up. You have to say that. Yeah. You have to say that. This is how logic works. Right? So, what would be your example of, non-manifest phenomena?
Rabbit's horn. A rabbit's horn.
I see, wonderful. Rabbit's horn, where is it?
Where is it? Not manifest.
Is it existent or not?
No. It's existent.
Is it existent?
No. Yes, it can be known.
No, is it existent?
What's your definition of existence?
That you've already learned.
Too much learning.
No. So those things which even the ordinary people can understand, you know, you don't have to learn it again.
It exists. Yeah.
It exists. I say, elephant in this house, it exists.
Yes.
Last time you said it doesn't exist.
It's not manifest.
No, I'm not talking about manifest. I'm simply asking if that is existing.
There is no elephant in this
so
house.
So what about those people, you know, you ask, you know, those people the peasants, you ask them, oh, I heard that, you know, in your farm, there are golden apples, you know, the apples made of gold, you know, growing. Is it existent? What will they say?
No.
No, they are non-existent.
Apples growing in their farm. Aren't
yeah.
They? Golden apples growing in their farm are not existent, but golden apples can be known by mind.
No, my question is, the apple made of gold, is there something growing in, you know, America?
No.
No, it's not found. It's not existent.
Not existent is different from not.
No, this is my question. Is it existent?
Yes.
You still say it is existent.
If it wasn't existent, how
would still, you simply ask the shopkeepers, you know, if they have, you know, a medicine to give enlightenment. What will they say? Oh, I don't have that. It is non-existent. They'll say it. And if you say that it exists, they will say that you are insane. So by studying philosophy, you don't become insane. Always try to conform to the, you know, to the ordinary conventional norms. Don't try to go beyond that. And don't try to think that you're intelligent.
I don't trust you. If it didn't exist.
So just tell me. So what can you think of, you know, a non-manifested phenomenon? Anyone?
An unborn baby?
No, another B. Is it existent or not?
No, that's hard.
Is it existent or not existent?
Yeah.
Existent? Okay. Existent. Where's it?
In the woman's hair.
Okay, so this means it is not non-manifest phenomena.
Sorry, just a quick question. When you say non-manifest, you mean hidden, right?
Yeah. Oh, no, I'm simply asking. So simply don't try to think of, you know, don't try to simply infer or, you know, what I mean. So I simply use the word and make sure that you get the meaning out of it, and accordingly you should be able to follow. So what would be the example?
Non-manifest. Hidden.
There is no non-manifest phenomena.
There's no?
What would you point to as a functioning thing that wasn't manifest?
Karma.
Karma? Manifest, non-manifest. Non-manifest? Subtle workings of karma. Mm-hmm. Subtle workings of karma, which is beyond our, understanding. Mm-hmm. That's quite good.
Yeah.
Bodhicitta, I think this is a better example. Subtle workings of the karma, workings of the subtle karmas.
Wouldn't it then have to be a non-functioning thing? Manifest and functioning thing are mutually inclusive.
Where is that?
It's right here, cited in
Verse 99.
Functioning things are mutually inclusive. Good. Karma is a functioning thing. Mm-hmm. Impermanent.
Yes.
So then how can it be
what?
Manifest?
What is that? A manifest phenomena. Oh, yeah. It is not. So then, it should be, so now it is actually the work of Venerable Chinyila and the helpers to prove that it is non-manifest. So, anyone who is saying that this is manifest? The subtle workings of the karma. I see, look. Now let's attack. So, is that non-manifest?
No.
Is that manifest? Okay. That is not manifest because it doesn't fulfill the definition of manifest phenomena.
It's not manifest because the prime...
Exactly. It's not realized, explicitly realized by direct prime cognition.
The Buddha doesn't have karma?
Good point. So you, your job is to say it is, when we said that the subtle workings of the karma is non-manifest because it is not realized, explicitly realized by the direct, by what?
Direct
prime cognition. Then you say, I don't agree.
Okay.
You say that.
I don't agree.
Yeah, which means that, it doesn't qualify that.
Mm-hmm.
So, this means that it doesn't qualify the reason that we put. You disagree with the reason that we put.
Mm-hmm.
Now what, when you say disagree, then we have to try to convince you to agree with us. So we say that is that explicitly realized by a direct prime cognition?
Yes.
Okay. So what is that direct prime cognition which explicitly realizes it?
The Buddha's mind.
Good. This is how the logic works.
You can't just be...
Good.
You can't do it just quick and easy.
Now the question is... Good. Now this is not the end.
Okay.
So up to this point you are very successful. Now let's see how it works further, So if the mind of the Buddha understands something directly, is it the case that that object should be realized by direct prime cognition?
Yes.
Yes. So can you think, isn't there any non-manifest phenomena? Because everything should necessarily be directly realized by the Buddha's prime cognition.
Every phenomena.
Yeah. So there's no non-manifest phenomena?
No.
No, yes. No.
There's not.
So this means that what about the non-functional things?
Non-functional
phenomena. The permanent phenomena. The permanent phenomena, are they manifest or non-manifest?
They don't function permanently.
No. Are they manifest or non-manifest? This is my question.
They're manifest.
They are manifest. They are functional things or non-functional things?
Functional things.
They are not functional things because they are permanent. Because they are not impermanent. Because impermanent phenomena and functional things, these two are mutually inclusive. This is what is said
you.
in this text.
It says you, but to any normal person, they would
No. I'm citing this. Yeah. I'm citing this text. You have to,
That's contradicting what's worldly renowned.
No. So, your job... The answerer's job is to hold on to, take this text so precious. Don't let it simply, throw it in the dumps.
But
But I can't just contradict what's
going on. No. Hold on. Try to hold on this and then see how to reconcile with the worldly norms. First, this is the priority, and then reconcile with the worldly norms. Yeah. So, according to this text, non-functional things and permanent phenomena, these two are mutually inclusive. So the permanent phenomena, is it manifest phenomena?
Yes.
Yes. It is not manifest phenomena because it is not functional things. Because functional things and manifest phenomena, these two are mutually inclusive. Right? So, isn't it manifest phenomena? You have to say no. So if it is not manifest phenomena, it is because it is an object that is explicitly realized by direct prime cognition. If you say no, it is because it is, you know, explicitly realized by the direct prime cognition of the Buddha. This is your point. Okay, let's go further. The definition of a hidden phenomena is an object that is explicitly realized by an inferential prime cognition. Hidden phenomena and an object of knowledge are mutually inclusive. Okay, so let's go further. Three times. The definition of a pastness, pastness or the past of an object, is that state of destructiveness which exists, or disintegratedness, which exists in the next period after the time of an object. The object being a functional thing that is other than its own pastness. Okay, the definition of futureness of an object is that state of a non-production of a functional thing, which is other than its future. In some time and place, due to non-completion of subsidiary causes, although the main cause for its production is present. The definition of present object is that which has been produced and has not ceased. A pastness and a futureness are both permanent because they are mere absences and do not undergo momentary change. Present object and function thing are mutually inclusive. Moreover, these features should be known. The pastness of a thing occurs after that thing. The futureness of a thing occurs prior to that thing. Okay, so usually, so let me first define it in a more, you know, the spoken language. Say, the past is defined as something which is produced and ceased. Something which is produced and yet ceased. This is past. And the future is something which is yet to be given rise to. And the present is something which is given rise to and yet to cease. Which is produced and yet to cease. That's a very simple way of defining it three times. Past, how do you define it? Something which is produced and ceased. Future, something which is yet to be arisen. And a present.
Something that's produced and has ceased.
Good. So now let's see how it is defined here. The definition of pastness of or the past of an object is that state of destructiveness which exists in the next period after the time of an object. Okay, let us do it this way. This tissue. You have this tissue, right? The present. This is produced and yet deceased. Let's call it the complete tissue. The complete tissue. I bring it to two. Right? So what happened to now is second moment. You know? Now is the second moment. So is there the complete tissue?
No.
So what is left? It is the destructiveness or the disintegratedness of the previous tissue. Right? But don't point to these two as the disintegratedness, you know. So the past, the what is that? Where is the past complete tissue? Tissue A. So now, simply in the form of memory. Simply in the form of memory. And now you can, at the most, you know, these two are totally different from the original tissue A. Right? It's totally different from tissue A. So what we have is simply in the form of memory. And also, at the most, what we can see is that, you know, it is already destroyed. It is already disintegrated. You know? So we can simply mentally think about the disintegratedness of the tissue A. Right? And what you have now is two different things. Right? Okay. So that comes to your mind as the disintegratedness of tissue A is what is known as the pastness of tissue A. Right? Okay. So now next, I'm not good at making, you know, flowers and birds out of tissue. Right? Say, is there any paper bird here? No. Right? So, what you're going to do is that out of this paper, you know, the next moment I'm going to create a bird. Not a real bird, but a paper bird. Right? So, the paper bird, is it yet arisen? No. Not yet arisen. Right? So, the paper bird is actually the future. Right? So, let's see how it is defined here. First, the definition of pastness of an object is that state of destructiveness which exists in the next period. Right? Next period meaning, does the destructiveness or the disintegratedness of tissue A exist at the time of tissue A? No. So the disintegratedness of tissue A simply follows tissue A, right? So which means that exists in the next period of tissue A. Next period, after the time of an object, tissue A. Object being a functional thing, meaning the object should be a functional thing. We don't think about the permanent phenomena, right? The functional thing or impermanent phenomena which undergoes change, or, you know, there's a destructiveness, and then at that moment there is the pastness of the object. Because then the second moment when we think about the tissue is lost. So there, the tissue is no more there. So when you think about tissue A, we have to simply go in the memory, in the past, by means of memory, you know. So what is there? What is really left here is the destructiveness or the disintegratedness of tissue A. So this is the pastness of that tissue, right? So now definition of futureness of an object is that state of a non-production of a functional thing. So say, the bird, you know, the bird of a tissue paper, so which is yet to arise. A state of a non-production is yet to be produced. Non-production of a functional thing, which is other than its future, which is other in some time and place. Which is other, meaning, you know, what we have right now is what?
Tissue.
Just the tissue, which is not, you know, formed as a bird, right? So this is other than what is going to be produced as a bird. You agree?
Mm-hmm.
This is not a paper bird.
Right.
And a paper bird is what you're going to produce sometimes later, tomorrow,
mm-hmm.
right? So that paper bird and the tissue paper right now that is in my hand, these two are other, these two are different, right? So, in some time and place, due to non-completion of subsidiary causes. So why is it that this paper is yet to be produced in the form of paper bird? Because the causes are not complete, right? So, because of non-completion of subsidiary causes, although the main cause for its production is present. So the main cause is the paper. It's there, but you know, someone should be there to create it. So it is not there. So because of lacking the subsidiary courses, although the main course is there, because of the lacking of the subsidiary courses, we don't have that object arising. So this state of the non-production, you know, can you think of, you know, can you think of the paper bird?
Yes.
You may be, you know, curious as to how he's going to, you know, make a paper bird. Beautiful one or ugly one? Unattractive one. Right? Unattractive. So, we don't know. You are so curious of. So, which means that you are, in your mind, you are creating something which is not yet produced. So that, you know, non-production, you know that it is not, is it produced or not yet produced?
Not
yet produced. Not yet produced, you know. Non-production of that object now, is it existent or non-existent? The non-production of the paper bird, is it existent or non-existent? It is existent. So this is what is known as the futureness of this bird, you know. The bird, paper bird.
Can I ask another question?
Yes.
So suddenly you have to sneeze, you blow your nose, and now the future, and now the future object is going to be garbage, not a bird.
Oh, you're right. So in that case, let's say anyone who uses this for, you know, blowing your nose, you're going to be fined $1,000. Right? So you're going to use something else. This is going to be reserved for making a paper bird.
But the intention for the object doesn't have anything to do with the futureness in the example, right?
What? Intention? No, it doesn't matter.
It doesn't matter.
So say...
It doesn't matter.
Yeah.
It's going to be garbage.
So this is quite right. You know, you're quite right. I quite agree with you. Because this can be used in any way. In all different ways. Then what about, you know, tomorrow's you? No one can stop you from becoming tomorrow. Tomorrow's you. Right?
But nobody knows what it is either.
But it is existent. You don't know where it is. It's going to be whether in Sravasta Abbey or in the Trishita realm, we don't know.
Yeah.
But it is there.
Yeah.
It is existent. But it is yet to be produced. It is the non-production of tomorrow's, you know, Venerable Chinyi, right?
Yeah.
It's existent. So that is the futureness of, you know, Venerable Chinyi.
Yeah, thank you.
Okay, the definition of a present object. Okay, it's all 12. We are done with that. The definition of a present object is that which has been produced and has not ceased. That's quite, you know, acceptable. For this, for example, this paper, or, you know, this mug. This is already produced and not yet ceased. Present. The pastness and futureness are both permanent because they are mere absences and do not undergo momentary change. So again, debate, you know. So actually, I would encourage you to do a little bit of debating here and there. Because that way, you know, it will keep your mind, you know, it will train your mind to work it so quickly. So meditation requires a very, very quick mind, you know, precise mind, clear mind, and alert mind. So the quickness is one of the basic requirements for a successful meditation. So to give you an example, to convince you of this fact, you know, the bodhisattvas, they train their mind in such a way that they are what is known as, you know, 173 topics of meditation. So the bodhisattvas, how do they train about? Is that first they meditate on the first topic, say for, you know, whole 2 days or whole, you know, 3 days like that. And then switch on to the next topic for the next 2-3 days like that. Provided you already have the understanding of emptiness, impermanence, all these things, right? And then you try to shorten the length of the time of the meditation of each of these topics. So then say you are quite successful, and then in just one go of the meditation, you spend, you know, 1 minute in the first topic, and the second minute in the second topic like that, right? And then still you shorten it. 1 second, the first topic, immediately you should be able to switch on to the next topic. You know? And then, 1 second, so how many seconds? 173 seconds. Then you have to shorten that. You know, a millisecond. In the first topic, you have to be able to switch that to the next topic so quickly, like that. To the extent, so this is how you, you know, gradually achieve the state of Buddhahood. So the Buddhahood is a state where you are not to take time to, you know, understand one object, the subsequently the next object like that. Instantly you have to understand everything. Similarly, so in order to get to that realization, the Bodhisattvas, what they do is they try to, you know, shorten the time of their understanding the objects, all objects, you know. And then gradually what happens? Then it will become simultaneous, right? Yeah. So what happens is that the Bodhisattvas, at one point, they train it to such extent that, just imagine, you know, what is this time? A time of a snap, right? So divide that into, you know, there are two ways of dividing that. Just this snap of time, even less than a second, divide that into 65. You know, in just one part of that, you know, one of the 65th, you know, division of that period of the snap, within that period, you should be able to realize all 173 topics, not just in, you know, in all, any manner you want to do, in a proper sequence. So this requires quickness. Right? So it's not just a passive meditation, you know. You simply do meditation. Of course meditation is so good. Simply do a meditation so without any alertness, without any sharpness, precision, clarity, quickness. So the quickness is one of the very important aspects of the meditation, you know. So here, say you meditate on impermanence, you know. Simply switch on to emptiness. I mean, come back to impermanence. You know? So say, how about this one? Say, do you think that 80 years old, you know, old man, do you think that he can be kind of quick enough to chase a small boy of 10 years old? You know? So he goes like this. By the time, you know, he goes there, the boy is already at the back. You know? So our negative emotions, they're so quick. And the counterforce, you know, the negative emotions, they are trained so well to the extent of, you know, like a small kid who can just go quick here and there, you know, just in a few seconds, like that. So, whereas the counterforce is so weak, you know, you can hardly go, first of all, you know. Once you get there, the negative emotion is already laughing at you from the back. Behind you, laughing at you, you know. And again you turn, by the time you turn, he's already, you know, the other side. Right? So therefore, similarly, just as our negative emotions, they are so active, they are so quick in the movement, the counter forces, the wisdom side as well, we should make it so quick. So the quickness is, you know, very important part of the meditation. So, for that, we need to train. So it doesn't mean that, you know, you spend your meditation time for this debate. I don't want you to do that. So what you're doing in itself is, I really appreciate, is so important, you know. So this forms almost like the, you know, the backbone of our practice. But at the same time, the quickness and the sharpness and alertness, you know, the precision, the gives a quality to your meditation. You know, so how to do that is during your casual, you know, when you're there during the lunch. So when you are in this period, you know, when the bell is gone, when the bell rings, then you can speak, then you can just do a little bit of debate, you know. So say you form two groups. Don't form three, four groups. Just two groups. you know, need not necessarily, oh, you should be on this side, not like that. Just someone open the debate, and then see, you know, who agrees with this first person, who do not. And so naturally there's going to be two groups, you know. And then somehow, if you think that, oh, the other person's view is better than mine, then you can switch on, you can change, you know. So that way, just see. So as defined here, what is past, what is the future, what is present. So according to what is said here, it says that, so, but one thing that you have to keep in mind is that you should be so clear, is what is said in the text, you should be so, it should be so clear in your mind. And then when you're able, when you're citing the text, make sure that you don't cite it wrongly. Then the whole debate is going to lose its flavor. You know, make sure that what you cite is really there in the text, right? So what is said here is that the pastness and the futureness are both permanent, right? Because they are mere absences and do not undergo momentary change. Present object and functioning thing are mutually inclusive. Okay, so by keeping these points in your mind, then we debate. Say, is everything which is permanent, the pastness, the past and future, should they necessarily be what? Permanent?
Yes.
Yes. What about George Washington? Is he past or is he present or future? He's past. He's not present. He's permanent. He's not human being. He's a human being or not? He's the president of USA.
He's not human.
He was the first president. He's the first president of USA.
Yes.
It is only human beings who can be the president of USA. Not the dogs.
Yes.
Right? So he's a human being.
No.
He's not a human being because he's the president.
No. Yes.
He was the first president.
Yes.
He was.
Anyone who is, anyone, you know, so all along the line of the presidentship, we only see human beings, not dogs.
Right.
Right? So he should be a human being.
No.
Because he's in the line of this presidentship.
He's not a human being because...
No. So my debate is that he should be a human being because he's in the line of this, you know, presidentship of USA, and which you said that anyone who is in the line of this presidentship should necessarily be a human being, not a dog.
Yes.
Right? So he's a human being.
No.
He's in this line.
Yes.
So because he's in this line, he should be a human being.
Not necessarily.
Okay, good. Go. So this is how the debate goes. So this means even a dog can be in this line.
No.
Why not?
Because we've already established that it's only a human being.
Good.
In this line.
So this means it's your internal contradiction.
Yes.
So you mean to say that anyone who is in this line should be a human being?
Yes.
You agree?
Yes.
Don't say no.
Yes.
Yes. Are you sure?
Yes.
100%.
Yes.
Not 99%.
No.
Okay. So George Washington.
Yes.
He's a human being.
No.
He's not a human being. He's not born from mother.
He was.
He was born from mother.
Yes.
So this must be a human being.
Not necessarily.
He has someone the daughters or whatever in his lineage. A family, you know, his family is now.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
So this means, was he born as a human being or what?
Yes. He was born as a human being.
He's born as a human being?
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
So is he a human being or not?
No.
He's not a human being. What is he?
He's a permanent, he's a pastness of his human being, yes.
is he a living being?
No.
Not a living being. I see. So this means that, you know, you're not going to become Buddha eventually.
I hope so.
Of course, you have Buddha nature.
Yes.
So one day you're going to become Buddha.
When?
Future.
One day in future.
In the future.
Yeah.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
You're going to become Buddha.
Yes.
So at one point, you'll become Buddha.
Yes.
Similarly, at one point, Joshua will become Buddha.
Yes.
George Washington. He's going to become Buddha.
Why not?
He's going to become Buddha or not?
He's talking to me.
One day he's going to become Buddha. All sentient beings. Is he a sentient being?
Yeah.
George Washington.
No.
He's not dead. He's dead.
He's giving me all the clues.
He's dead.
Yes.
He's non-existent.
Yeah.
He's non-existent.
Yeah.
He's past.
Yeah.
He's permanent.
Yeah.
He's existent.
No.
Because it's permanent.
Yeah.
So anything which is permanent should be existent.
Yes.
Because existence has two, permanent, impermanent.
His name is permanent.
He's not permanent.
He's not permanent.
He's not permanent. He's not permanent. He's not past.
He is past.
He is past. Anything which is past should be permanent.
Yes, right.
So he's permanent.
No.
Because he's past.
He's not past. He has pastness.
Oh, he's not past.
Destructiveness.
He's not past.
He's
not past.
He's not existent.
He's not existent.
Yes.
I see.
His past exists. His pastness, his destructiveness exists.
I see.
But
his fame is still alive.
Just like the
No. No longer. His fame is still alive.
Yes.
Right? Okay. The elephant of this house, elephant in this house, does it has any fame? Does it eat food?
No.
No, why not?
Because it doesn't.
It's not existent. And it has no fame. Why? It is not existent. The George Bush, George Washington, his fame is not alive.
No, I disagree.
Because
okay.
Just because you have fame doesn't mean you exist.
No,
just
okay.
Because there's a fame.
Okay. So why not the elephant in this house has a fame?
Has never existed.
Has never existed. Oh, very good. I should retreat now. Never existed. Okay. So, yesterday, is it existent?
No.
It's not existent. I see. You didn't do anything yesterday. Okay. So... Okay, so a present object and functioning thing are mutually inclusive. This is one point that you have to know.
Uh-huh.
You have to be able to have as a background to cite. And moreover, these features should be known. The pastness of a thing occurs after that thing. The futureness of a thing occurs prior to that thing. Mm-hmm. Now look. I don't know whether this is the answer, but this is one important thing that we should keep in mind. The pastness of a thing occurs after that thing. Mm-hmm. For example, I told you tissue A that existed, you know, a few minutes ago. So, now when you speak about the destructiveness of tissue A, we can speak about it. The destructiveness of tissue A exists now. Mm-hmm. It's no more, you know?
Uh-huh.
Okay. So the destructiveness of tissue A, did it precede by tissue A or it followed tissue A?
Followed.
So therefore it says the pastness of a thing, which means the destructiveness of tissue A, occurs after tissue A, after that thing, and the futureness of a thing occurs prior to that thing, which means that the paper bird, which I'm still yet to make, you know, so that... the futureness, is it future?
Yes.
The paper bird, say we are going to make it tomorrow.
It's future.
Say it's future. You know, the non-production of the paper bird, is it existent now?
The non-production exists of, now.
It exists now, right?
Yes.
It is now. So which exists first? The non-production of the paper bird or the paper bird?
Non-production.
Okay, so this is... It means that the futureness of that object should precede that object.
Yes. Yeah.
Okay. Okay, we stop here for this morning. And your job to make sure that, you know, you have these small bit of the things which says these are mutually inclusive, you know.
Yeah.
you keep those things in your mind, make sure that you cite a quote exactly verbatim.
Yeah. Are the pastness and the futureness functioning things?
No. Because it says they are permanent. And from what we have earlier, permanent phenomena and non-functioning phenomena, these two are mutually inclusive. So everything is, you know, what we studied earlier and what's following, they are all connected to one another. Mm-hmm. You know? So it's not something that is the new chapter. It's the new chapter like that. It's like a continuation.
This is a silly question perhaps, but does the non-production of the paper bird exist now?
Mm. Yes.
So it has arisen but has not yet ceased?
Sorry?
It has arisen but has not yet ceased?
Which one?
The non-production of the paper bird.
Has it arisen?
Has it arisen and not yet ceased? Is it present?
It's not present.
Oh, so it hasn't arisen?
It'll never arise.
It will never arrive.
They say it'll never be produced.
Right,
yeah.
That's permanent.
Yeah.
Okay. So this has to do with
it. Yeah. Okay, we stop here for this morning.